News outlets across Oregon, including JPR, joined forces this week in a rare discussion of suicide. For decades, if not more, suicide has been one of the subjects news people generally do not cover in individual cases. Like bomb threats, the belief was that we would only encourage the behavior by covering it. But now Oregon ranks number 16 in the country for its suicide rate per 100,000 people. By comparison, California is way down at number 45. The Breaking the Silence campaign brings news media together to cover the suicide issue from many angles. We invited reps from the National Alliance on Mental Illness chapter in Southern Oregon, NAMI-SO, to join us to talk about the chapter's program aimed at preventing youth suicides, coincidentally called Ending the Silence. Two guests in the studio, Emily Perkins is the lead volunteer for Ending the Silence. She's here with me. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, sir.
And Leslie Sanders is here as well. She is the board president of NAMI Southern Oregon. Leslie, good to see you in the studio.
Good to see you. Thanks for having us.
So give us a sense first of, let's go really broad and just talk about mental illness generally, Leslie, if you could address just how much or how little people like to talk about this, or how much or how little they seem to understand when they do.
Well, it is little. People seem to be afraid of it. It's more of an education piece. It really is one in four people when you look around. So somebody you know does have mental illness. They may not talk about it because of the stigma. That's one of the things that NAMI works on, is stigma.
Why is that stigma still in existence, do you suppose?
I have to say it's a lack of education, that people just don't realize what's going on. You know, depression is a big one, and a lot of people don't even think of depression as mental illness.
Pull that microphone, if you would, right in front of you, between you and me. So just swing it to your right a little bit.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah, that way it'll stay in front of you. Okay.
Okay.
And so, Emily Perkins, let me get an idea from you about the discussions of suicide specifically, as opposed to just all mental illnesses. Is there more of a stigma, you think, than other mental illness with suicide itself?
I think there's even just a little bit more of a stigma. I think when suicide happens, I think that generally people want to have somebody to blame. And so, unfortunately, a lot of times that finger gets pointed at a parent or a loved one, inappropriately, I believe, because truly, I do not think mental illness is anyone's fault. And I think that oftentimes people are afraid to talk about suicide, whether it be within their family or within their community, because they are afraid that those blaming fingers will get pointed and that it will paint people in a negative light that have loved and cared for someone who has committed suicide.
Does some of this come down from taboos of previous generations? I mean, the fact is that there are still a fair number of religious organizations that think in terms of suicide being a sin.
Absolutely. Some of this definitely comes from prior generations. And I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done within religious organizations as well regarding mental illness just in general. There's a lot of ignorance within that community regarding mental illness. And there's a lot of negativity sometimes that I think could really be addressed with education as well.
All right, so which is what Ending the Silence is about. This is an educational program aimed at what age group or what group in the population?
It's actually a program designed by high school students for high school students. And so that's really neat. All of the videos and PowerPoint part of the presentation is created by other high school students. We aim it towards middle school or high school. We have also spoken here at the SOU campus as well a couple of times. Really, it's aimed at early intervention, because statistics state that your average young person that's dealing with a mental illness will wait 5 to 8 years before seeking any treatment. And that is because of stigma, hands down. And my goal is to help reach young people so that they do not participate in that stigma and wait that 5 to 8 years, or even worse, end up during that waiting time, end up taking their lives and never getting the help that they need.
What are they waiting for then? You talk about that waiting time.
I think there a lot of them are waiting to not be embarrassed, or maybe they have a parent or guardian who's not educated and unable to understand when they come to them with their issues. And so rather than seeking another adult that they trust to be able to speak with about it, whether it be a coach, a teacher, or a therapist, they oftentimes will just be told it's a part of your hormone change or your all the stresses that are happening right now in society, in school. And so I think, unfortunately, they do wait because they wait until they're a little bit older and maybe can seek treatment on their own, Or they wait until they hit a crisis point, unfortunately, and then they're really thrust into having to seek treatment.
Leslie Sanders, I see a lot of nods of agreement here. Yes. So is there a trend still in society to respond to a young person feeling enough pain to consider suicide, to just to come back with, get over it, or, buck up or something like that?
Yeah, a lot of times you hear they just want attention. These are all myths. You know, another myth is don't mention suicide because that will make them think about it more. And it's just not true. People really want to talk about it. And you, as a supporter, want to give them a safe place to talk.
That whole idea of not talking about suicide has been beaten out of us, in essence, on the Jefferson Exchange for a while now. We've been made clear by a number of people working with people with mental illness that you don't create a situation where somebody thinks about suicide just by asking them if they are thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what kinds of responses should there be then? I mean, should we be asking then? I mean, if somebody seems like they're down or displaying a series of things that might be indicative of suicide, what's the proper approach from somebody who wants to help?
Yeah, just letting them know that they're not alone, that many people feel this way, and they're there to listen, to support them. Not that they have to know the answer. They just need to sit beside them, just be there for them. And the person can say anything they need to. It's not an argument. You don't have to convince them to do anything or not to do anything, just to be there and listen.
That's a big one for a lot of people, though, isn't it? Particularly
sure
for
is.
A parent, I would think, because
sure
you want to fix the problem
You're
with
the right.
child.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. But realizing that they can't fix the problem. You know, it is internal. You know, or I really like to think chemical. You know, it's a chemical imbalance, and that's something that chemicals can help. Other things, medicate, as far as exercise, things like that that we've talked about too, there are other options.
A whole lot more ground to cover here in this discussion of suicide on the Jefferson Exchange. We are taking part, along with news media organizations across Oregon, in the Breaking the Silence campaign this week to talk very frankly about suicide. We brought in the folks from NAMI Southern Oregon, where Leslie Sanders is the board president and Emily Perkins is the lead volunteer for a program called Ending the Silence. Not the same as Breaking the Silence, but a similar sort of approach to make sure that we talk very frankly about suicide. Join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have questions, comments, thoughts, or perhaps stories to share with us about suicide in someone you know. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Emily, talk about the creation of Ending the Silence. First of all, was this something that came from NAMI nationally?
It is a program that was started by NAMI nationally, and I got involved in the program about a year and a half ago. My dad is actually a co-presenter with me, and our program really looks like he presents the basics of how to recognize signs and symptoms of mental illness, how to help friends if you see that. We really encourage people to talk to adults, and then we also, after his part of the presentation, I share from my life experience. We let everybody know we are not professionals at anything, but I have committed to share my story of my personal journey with mental illness because I believe there is absolutely hope that you can live well with mental illness, and I want to express that to young people so that they don't have a fear of a diagnosis or a fear of stepping out and getting help, but they understand that it is okay, they're not alone, they're not the first person to struggle, and it doesn't by any means limit the opportunities that they have for their future.
Was thinking about suicide part of your personal story?
It was. I struggled with graphic visual images of suicide that would race through my head, almost like a movie on fast forward. So for me, I never had a suicide plan. I did not contemplate taking my life as far as sitting down and figuring out how I would do that. However, I would struggle on a regular basis with these frequent pictures, and it really didn't seem to associate to whether or not I was having a good day or a bad day. And so for me, it got to the point where I was afraid to be at home alone, where there were knives and other things. And for me, I made a choice to check myself into a hospital so that I could get more help so that I didn't end up being a part of a suicide statistic.
Were the images that you described, the graphic images, coming from some other place? Were they things you'd picked up from movies, from graphic novels? Or were they just coming from inside your own head?
Just coming from inside my own head. And frankly, I started struggling with depression as a small child. And these images really started more once I got into high school. And honestly, I am very, very logical person. And so I started going, okay, I need to watch what I put in. I need to watch what I read and be really careful that I don't expose myself to any type of graphic imagery that would fuel this problem. And so, no, I don't believe it was from things that I read or saw or put in. It really was just an issue inside my brain of something that I struggled with. A lot of mental illness can be associated with genetics, and I happen to have a mom that struggled with depression as well. Our journeys were really different, but some of the imagery that we struggled with was similar.
How old were you when you checked yourself into a hospital?
I was 27 years old when I checked myself into the hospital, and at that time I had already been seeking treatment for mental health. I just was not feeling like I was safe. Even with the medication that I was taking, I really felt like I needed more to help address the problem in a quicker fashion, because the constant struggle, as you can imagine, was very disruptive, quite disturbing and exhausting. And so even though I was functioning to all the outside world, I was working a full-time job, and for as far as everyone else could see, it looked like I was holding it together. The internal struggle was so intense that it became really exhausting just to function from day to day.
It sounds like you've always had a fair amount of, well, maybe an even extraordinary amount of self-knowledge, though, to realize when things weren't working and could give some analysis to why they weren't working for you.
Yes, I'm very blessed with self-awareness. And honestly, I've done a lot in the years that I've struggled with mental illness to get quite a bit of therapy and training so that knowledge so that I can have that awareness. It's not something that everybody with mental illness really is able to have, and I feel blessed that I do have that and very thankful that I have surrounded myself with a great support system that help look out for me when sometimes that awareness isn't there.
Emily Perkins, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, lead volunteer for the Ending the Silence program of NAMI Southern Oregon, NAMI being the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Leslie Sanders is the board president for NAMI SO. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about suicide very frankly and the things that lead to people considering it and the way the rest of the world responds to it. We are changing that ourselves through the Breaking the Silence campaign with news media across the state of Oregon this week. You can join the conversation and we can continue to clear up any confusion there might be between breaking the silence and ending the silence, but generally it's to make sure we talk very frankly about suicidal ideation. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Leslie Sanders, in addition to stigma, it seems like, I'm going to just guess here, that there's a certain amount of disbelief, I would think, particularly when a young person expresses feelings that would appear to be mental illness. Do people just think, oh, no, you're too young. This is not a time in your life you'd be having this.
I think that's the last thing that they want to think about. You know, like you said, there's that denial of a person really feeling this way. And it's, again, that's lack of education, lack of information. If anybody's ever been 16, they've probably felt suicidal at least 10 seconds, 20 seconds. So we're not all that different. Everybody's been there at one point in their lives. So we can connect that way, just understanding, you know, that, hey, I have felt that way before. It's not so unusual. It's not so strange. It's, you know, let's stop denying it. Let's just talk about it.
Emily already pointed out that that the people who go out and deliver Ending the Silence program are volunteers, not mental health professionals.
Right.
Give us a broader overview then about who makes up NAMI here and everywhere.
Well, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, thank you for saying that, is a nationwide program, about 275,000 volunteers. It is the largest grassroots volunteer organization. And I'm moving the mic. Okay. So we've been around 40 years. In Southern Oregon, we've been around 30 years, and we're still working to grow the program. We need volunteers to actually do this program that Emily's doing so we can go to more students, junior high and high school. And we're going to have a training coming up in June. And if people call our library, they can get in touch and sign up for that.
So training for what specifically?
For breaking the silence. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Ending the silence.
Oh, see, we do get them crossed up.
Now I'm getting it mixed up.
All right. So, and then how long is the training, Emily, for ending the silence?
It's a one-day training event. And then once you've done the training, the commitment that they ask out of you is that within a year, you'll at least speak probably two or three times. I personally, this is just a passion of mine. And so I have done quite a few more sessions than that,
right.
Because it is so personal to me. One of the things that I will never forget is when I hospitalized myself, my dad came to visit and he sat down and said to me, "This is not going to be our family secret." That statement right there and my parents' commitment to live this in the light with me has really helped with my recovery and is a part of the reason why I know without a shadow of a doubt that there is hope for people out there that struggle. And so I will do as many presentations as I possibly can because I believe it's crucial that we speak to young people and that we start these conversations because to me, if even one life is saved, it is absolutely worth every amount of time and energy that we have put into the presentation.
You said your dad does the presentations with you then. So mm-hmm. So does he? Do you both give the two sides of your story?
We do. He introduces a little bit of what it was like as a dad to get a call from your daughter who says, "Hey, I checked myself into the hospital." And he also shares a little bit of his experience, what it was like as a husband when my mom shared with him about the depression that she dealt with. And like I said, we both had very different journeys. In her journey, the first medication she tried worked, and she's had been living successfully ever since. My journey was a little bit more complicated as far as finding the right fit of medication and therapy to help me be stable. But my parents and my family have always stood beside me in helping to support me through that process. And so as a family, we are committed to having these conversations, even though they're oftentimes very challenging. And when I share from my story, I share as raw and honest as I possibly can. I often tell students it's not very often an adult will tell you they're going to answer all of your questions 100% truthfully, but I commit to do that for them because I think it's important for them to know that even though the things I have been through have been difficult and challenging, that they did not and do not define me. They're not the period at the end of my story. They just happen to be a chapter of my life that I look at that chapter and I am willing to use that chapter and speak from it so that other people can live a happy and healthy life.
We were talking about suicide here on the Jefferson Exchange as part of the Breaking the Silence program with news media across the state of Oregon. Emily Perkins is with NAMI Southern Oregon, the lead volunteer for the Ending the Silence program. Leslie Sanders is NAMI Southern Oregon's board president. You can join our conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We do have a monthly segment with the folks at Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. And so we have heard many times now how long a journey it can be, A, to get diagnosis, and B, to get the meds adjusted. So for you, how long a process was that?
Wow. For me, the process was about a decade. Not all of that was the process in finding the appropriate medication. I've been on the same medication now for probably 7 years of that. But the first 3 years were pretty intense in trying to find the right level of medication to stabilize me. And then I have really made myself dive wholeheartedly into therapy. I refuse to sit by and say, "I'm a victim of X," or "this defines me." Instead, I have really pursued with all of my heart and all of my time, a lot of it, really pursued therapy opportunities. I've done everything from group therapy, individual therapy, yoga therapy, I've done some alternative types of things called EMDR and one called TMS that are different types of treatments for mental health. And I have found great success. And really, I look at it like you can walk around with an empty tool belt, but you're not going to be able to fix anybody's house, least of all your own. Or you can strap that tool belt on and you can go out and get the tools and fill it all up so that when you are struggling with mental health issues, you can apply those tools that you've learned so that you can not only get through the day, but you can move from survival mode to thrive mode.
Leslie Sanders, we've talked about the people who get involved with NAMI, not mental health professionals, but people with an interest in mental health. But it sounds like there's no particular proscription against people who have never been experienced with any sort of mental illness issue, either in themselves or anybody else. I mean, can anybody really join up and be an ally with NAMI?
Oh, yes. Yes, we need allies. What we do, what works so well for NAMI is that people that teach classes or present, like Emily, have lived experience. So they are speaking to people directly from their hearts. We have a connection support group for people with mental health conditions, and that is facilitated by a person with a mental health condition. Same with our family support group. Those are family members that have children or young adults, you know, who grew up with a mental health condition. So they really are able to connect. And it's not just book reading, it's lived experience.
But it sounds like one of the major components of what NAMI does, though, is to let people know they're not alone.
Exactly, exactly.
On either end of this, whether it's the person who's been dealing with mental illness or family members observing it.
Yeah, that's what's so great, is that we don't just serve the person with mental health condition, we serve the family, their spouse, their children, their parents, everybody.
We are coming back. We'll continue the discussion here on the Jefferson Exchange as part of our Breaking the Silence campaign with the rest of news media in Oregon about the prevalence of suicide. Why is this happening this week? Well, because Oregon comes in number 16 in suicide rates per 100,000 population, where California, for example, at 45. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with Leslie Sanders and Emily Perkins. And if you'd like to join us, we'll talk to you as well. It is 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Oregon ranks number 16 in the country for its suicide rate. By comparison, California is way down at number 45. The Breaking the Silence campaign brings news media together to cover the issue of suicide from many angles this week in Oregon. We invited reps from the National Alliance on Mental Illness chapter in Southern Oregon, NAMI-SO, to join us to talk about the chapter's program aimed at preventing youth suicides. It's called Ending the Silence, not quite the same as Breaking the Silence, but you get a trend here that it's time for us to talk frankly about suicide, and that's what we're doing with Leslie Sanders, who is the board president for NAMI Southern Oregon, and Emily Perkins, who's the lead volunteer for the Ending the Silence training program. You can join the conversation on the exchange. It is time for us to talk openly and frankly about suicide. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Leslie Sanders, you mentioned as we were coming back from the break that you have some stats on Jackson County alone, which I understand is somewhat higher than the rest of Oregon.
We're the highest in Oregon out of, what do we have, 31 counties?
36 counties.
36 counties, yeah. We're the highest. Let's see, in 2018, just in Jackson County, there were 73 suicides. In 2017, there were 57. And of those suicides, guns, it was gun death, 40 out of 73. The next, it was second, was overdose, and that was 14 out of the 73. And there are particular age ranges, too, that that seem to rank higher, and that's 31 to 40 is a pretty high age range, 61 to 70, and then 71 to 80 is a very high range for suicide.
Okay, so a couple of places at opposite ends of life where the activity is a little higher. Now, do I understand it correctly, too, that suicide is a greater cause of death in Oregon, for example, than car crashes?
Yes.
And some other things that people automatically assume will be large causes of death.
Yeah, it's the second leading cause, too, of teens. It used to be the third, and now it's the second.
So I can see there's certainly some urgency to communicate the message to teens.
That's how we feel,
and is there a particular age group, Emily Perkins, that is the central target of what you do with the Ending the Silence campaign?
You know, we really are targeting high school students, but to be honest with you, I have enjoyed speaking at SOU as well, because those are a lot of the kids that were high school students that are a part of that statistic that didn't get help yet. So really, we target high school, but honestly, we will speak in middle schools or high schools, because the earlier the intervention, the better. I want to see people live a full quality of life, and I don't want to see people just waiting on the sidelines and kind of hanging out in just survival mode and trying to figure out what's going on inside of their heads without being able to share that openly and being able to talk through the struggles that they're having.
Do people come up to you often after the Ending the Silence presentations and say, you know, I have been thinking about this for a while?
Absolutely. I would say that one of the most important things that we do is at the end of our presentation, we open it up for question and answers from the students. And then we stay after in between the class periods to talk to students. And they are very open with me. There's generally a bit of a line of students waiting to talk to me after classes. I have even had students ask me if I would stay after school to talk to them. And they share very openly from their personal experiences. I've had a lot of students that have either made at least one suicide attempt previously or are seriously considering it and are at a crisis point where they need immediate intervention in order to prevent themselves from making that attempt. So I'm really thankful for the school districts that are really investing into starting these conversations on mental health awareness, that are having counselors available at the school that deal specifically with mental illness, which is fantastic. And we really appreciate all of the community service providers that really help once these kids have been identified to provide the services necessary to help them from making that decision as far as that next step and making a suicide attempt or completing a suicide attempt.
Does the silence add to the allure, I wonder? I mean, and I wonder if talking about suicide very frankly removes some of its attractive power because it's so taboo, and yet when you talk about it, it's like, well, it's not so taboo anymore, is it? I wonder if that's a factor at all.
Honestly, I'm not sure. I was told actually about 2 weeks ago in a high school class that self-harm is quote-unquote trendy right now, which made me very sad. I know that self-harm for a lot of people is so common that oftentimes it's looked at as just a means of someone trying to get attention. And therefore, a lot of times it's ignored by friends, parents, and even teachers. And I am of the belief that anytime you have self-harm going on, you need to take that as a very serious wake-up call, and you need to start having discussions with those people and asking the question, are you suicidal? Not being afraid to ask that question. And if someone tells you that they are suicidal, not leaving them alone and making sure that you take immediate action. We tell students to not be afraid to talk to adults about it, get another adult involved. We give them the crisis number for Jackson County Mental Health because they are the local crisis provider. They have 24-hour crisis line. And we also tell them, don't be afraid to call 911 if that's what you need to do, because you could save a life. The only thing that we encourage them not to do is nothing, because doing nothing leaves that person alone, and that can end up in a very negative way.
So don't just think it's going to go away.
Absolutely not. These are not problems that resolve themselves. Absolutely. Very rarely is there ever a time where someone is struggling with mental illness or even self-harm that it's going to just be a phase, per se, that they're going through. It's something that deserves immediate attention and needs to be addressed with all seriousness. And I think that in order to end the trend, per se, we have to start having those conversations, and we have to not be afraid when we see someone who is self-harming to speak to an adult or get somebody else involved and address it as though 100%, this is a very serious issue.
Let me give the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, so make sure we get all the counties we serve covered, not just Jackson County. And that's 800-273-TALK. If you get used to 273-TALK, that should stick in your head. It's 273-8255. So put it all together again, 800-273-8255. And then if somebody, if you're about to ask somebody, how big a deal or not should the intervention be? How confrontational? What form should it take? Or more importantly, I guess, what form should it not take?
I think the form it should not take is you should really avoid sentences that start with "you should," followed by any kind of dot, dot, dot. You can fill in the blank there at all. Mm-hmm. Because
keep it in the
people
eye language.
Don't need you to fix them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need you to give them 10,000 suggestions about what works for you for stress management. And frankly, a lot of times that really escalates anxiety in people and oftentimes makes them feel less than or like they shouldn't have started, they shouldn't start that conversation. So I believe that if you are talking with someone who you believe is at immediate risk to themselves and or others, that you need to suggest that they get a professional person to speak to. And so if you're a young person, you need to talk to a trusted adult. If you talk to a trusted adult and they are ignorant on the topic of mental illness or don't understand, you need to be willing to talk to another one until you find someone that can understand. And I think that I encourage students to seek a professional treatment, whether it be the therapist at their school or reaching out to their doctor. If they are unable to get their parent or guardian to understand what's going on, being able to see if they can get another adult to help advocate for them and continuing to have those conversations. It is absolutely crucial that we don't try to just sit around and fix the issue with others, because really we're not qualified to do that, but we are qualified to be with them and stay with them and make sure that we don't leave their side until they get some intervention.
So the major message here is whichever side of this you're on, thinking about it or you're concerned that somebody is thinking about it, talk about it. Bring it up, bring it out in the open, which is the whole main point of the Ending the Silence campaign from NAMI around the country and specifically NAMI Southern Oregon, who we're talking to now. Emily Perkins is the lead volunteer for the Ending the Silence program. Leslie Sanders is the board president of NAMI Southern Oregon. We've learned so much today. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the Ending the Silence program.
Thank you for
having us, sir. Okay.